Kevin and Yurko, and we'll get back to football, Bears, Vikings. We're going to save Yurko's keys till Monday, of course, because the Bears and the Vikes wrap Week 10 on Monday Night Football. But we will get back to a little NFL here coming up. Also, 30 minutes from now, out to Vegas, we'll talk to our buddy Todd Furman. Congrats to Jose Abreu for winning the AL MVP award. 60-game season, he was pretty awesome, let's face it.
Yeah, if you extrapolate his numbers over 162, it's really a phenomenal season he would have had.
In terms of RBIs and home runs,
52 home runs.
Yeah.
He would have had 162 ribbies. I mean, it really would have been something special.
Yes.
So congratulations go to, you know, the guy that Carm wanted to get rid of, Jose Abreu.
Yes.
But he's here.
Not because I think he's bad, but
I agree.
I didn't.
They're still backlogged at the position.
I didn't like the signing then, and I still don't like the signing.
Is that why it took you so long to say congratulations to the White Sox MVP?
Yeah. Congratulations.
He mentioned three Cubs getting votes before he mentioned that Jose Abreu won the MVP.
I wanted to tease that. That's why.
That and so you like to diminish Jose Abreu's accomplishments.
Yes. I wanted
to tease.
Big Frank, yep.
Big Frank, Dickie Allen.
Dick Allen, and then...
And then, of course, the great Nelly Fox.
Was Nelly Fox an MVP, or was that Parisio?
Nelly Fox.
Yeah. Good job. Good call.
Why do I know more White Sox history than Carmen DeFalco?
That's a pretty good one. Nice job.
All right, you asked me a question before the break.
Yeah, this is just a funny story. Do you know the three Cubs that got MVP votes?
I'll be guessing.
Okay.
I would guess, and I don't know if this surprises you or not, Ian Happ.
Ian Happ did get a vote, Yurko.
Of course he did. He's the best offensive player on the Chicago Cubs last
year. Ian Happ got 1/10th place vote, so he did have 1 point.
Right. So you're telling me two other Cubs.
While you think about it, Yurko.
One is a surprise.
Fun fact, you know Ian Happ is the only player who hit more home runs at Wrigley Field last year than Jose Abreu.
Is that right?
Ian Happ hit 8 home runs at Wrigley Field. Jose Abreu hit 6.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Now, that's mind-boggling.
Two other guys in the Cubs that had 11 home runs.
So
it was Ian Happ with 12. Two other guys had 11.
Was Schwarber one of those guys?
Yeah, Schwarber was one of them, and I believe Rizzo had 11 home runs.
R-I-Z-Z-O. All right, so you got Happ, you're right, and then, you know, another one.
And you're telling me it's a little bit of a surprise.
Another one's pretty obvious, and then there's one that I don't think you'd get if I gave you the entire roster because you don't know.
Wilson Contreras.
No.
How about Jason Hayward?
No. Stop thinking offense. Stop thinking position player.
Yu Darvish.
Got 2 7th-place votes, Yurko, 2 9th-place votes, and 2 10th-place votes. So he got the most votes out of all the Cubs.
So Yu Darvish, Ian Happ,
and then with another 10th-place vote.
I don't know how many guesses you could tell him he's a member of the bullpen.
He wouldn't know.
I mean, Yurko's probably never heard of him. I would say 50% of Cubs fans probably couldn't guess him.
Ryan Tepera got 1 vote. For MVP, a 10th-place vote. You know what happened?
What?
The longtime scribe from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the writer, Rick Hummel, called the commish by his peers, a very well-respected guy. And in 06, he actually won the Baseball Writers Association of America's Award for Excellence that is presented during the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. He voted for Ryan Tepera because he accidentally clicked Tepera over Trey Turner, and he didn't double check, and he submitted his ballot.
Yeah, that would have been a million chances, though.
How great is that? So Ryan Tepera gets to go down, like, on his baseball reference page, he'll have, for 2020, only in 2020 could this happen, he'll have MVP 18th. He finished 18th in the MVP voting. Ryan Tepera, who in all honesty did have a pretty good year. So good
Ryan
Tepera.
Congratulations go out to you, Darvish.
Yes, you had the bounce back year that everybody had hoped.
Finally, in year three, you, Darvish, pitched like a gentleman.
Will they trade you, Darvish?
Oh, if he's the only thing of value that you have, somebody is looking for you, then okay, go ahead and trade you, Darvish. But if you think you're going to win any games next year and you don't want to have you, Darvish, since he's finally proven that he could win, and his numbers would have extrapolated to about 19 victories this year. See, and they really do matter. The wins matter. And I know he pitched well in the second half last year, and it just didn't amount to wins. But they do matter. You know, having a guy that actually wins games that he starts and he pitches, it's an important thing.
It is, Carm.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Believe it or not,
it's very important. I mean, I don't want to say that.
He had one more win than he had the previous two seasons.
It's important for the team. You're right. I think there are better ways to judge a pitcher's worth or value.
Fine.
But yeah.
That's fine. I will give you that. Yeah. I will give you that. But when a guy goes out, your horse goes out there, and he starts it, pitches well, and they win that game,
yeah,
that means something.
Yes. Yeah, the team win means something. You're right about that.
So his 15 wins over 3 years, I'm telling you, wow.
5 wins a year, Yurko.
Oh, man, he finally beat one season of the great Jose Quintana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good for him, finally. Thank you. Welcome you. But if you plan on winning anything next year and you think you're going to do it without you, Darvish, you got another thing coming.
Joel Sherman was a very good baseball writer for what is Sherman's the New York Post, right? Or Daily News. Post, right? Yeah, New York Post. He floated the idea like, I don't know, maybe it was 2 weeks ago in a column he wrote that he floated the idea that maybe, you know, Darvish does get moved, that they look to continue to offload as much salary as they possibly can. And I think he was basically floating it out there as an idea for the Mets with new ownership coming in. If they go out and they sign Bauer, if they trade for you Darvish, then you have DeGrom, Bauer, and Darvish. Oof, that would be pretty impressive.
That's pretty good staff.
Yeah, and he kind of floated the idea that, and he wrote something to the effect, this isn't verbatim, but I think the reason he was speculating is because he kind of, you know, wrote, you know, baseball insiders believe that Ricketts is pretty dead set on reducing payroll as much as he possibly can. And if that would potentially include moving Darvish. Like, you're not moving.
How about the flip-flop in the city, Carm? The South Side team is going to be spending money on free agents, and the North Side team
they should
with
be
all with all the macaroni noodles on the outside of their stadium that they have. Doesn't make a difference. Not generating enough revenue. They're going to slash their budget to $100 million and become the Tampa Bay Rays.
I mean, look, they decline the option, right? They give the buyout to Lester. Now he might come back for like another $5 million. They'd still give Lester about $15 million for the year, but it beats the $25 million they would have had to give him, right?
Right.
How many more years on Jason Hayward, guys? Is there one more year left on Shea?
One more. That was an 8-year contract, dude.
That was an 8-year deal. Okay,
that was an 8-year deal,
and that was 16. So he's still got a couple years left. Okay. You still have Hayward's money, but you're going to lose, you know, if they were to lose Darvish's money too, if they could trade some of that, I mean, it would start to be significant with some of the savings that they have. They might end up trading Baez or Contreras or Chris Bryant, something like that. Yeah, they're going to slash it down as much as they can. And the team on the South Side should be spending because they don't have long-term obligations that are saddling them. They're all team-friendly deals, all the long-term deals, all of them are extremely team friendly, with nothing really hanging over their, hanging over their heads. So yeah, they should be going out and spending money, pandemic or not. They should be going out and spending money in the offseason.
All right. So the Southsiders are spending, the Northsiders are cutting salary, and they might put some Cavatelli or some other macaroni noodles on the outside for people to look at and take pictures next to. That's fine. If you trade Yu Darvish to the New York Mets, what does that minor league system look like, and what could I be expecting coming back?
Good question. I don't know.
Mean, that's what we got to start be looking at.
You'd probably get a big leaguer in that deal. Who's the shortstop that can't hit a lick, Miller?
Jose Reyes.
Ahmed Rosario probably comes in a deal like that, I would imagine. You know, you get some big league, relatively inexpensive big league talent. Yeah, Jose Reyes.
Hey, you said shortstop with the Mets, kid.
That's funny.
You mentioned, what did you say? You said, wait, a potential rotation if the Mets were to trade for you. You mentioned DeGrom.
Where they would sign Bauer and they would trade for you. Sherman was floating that idea.
Yeah. They still have, you didn't even mention, a shirtless Noah Syndergaard.
That's true.
Who would be back from Tommy John next year.
Boy, that's a pretty loaded. Look, this guy wants to make a statement, right? Stephen Cohen's the new owner, the new billionaire owner of the Mets. He wants to make a statement. He's out in New York talking about how we want to make this like the Yankees, da-da-da-da. Mets fans have heard it before.
Or would Syndergaard be the type of guy who would go back to the Cubs?
Could be. But does that...
I don't know. I'm just...
What good does that do? I mean, what's Syndergaard's contractual status look like?
Right? I think he's a free agent after next year, I believe.
He might be, actually. I'd have to look.
But you're getting, like, you know, if you're the Cubs and you're hamstrung for cash, it's not ideal. But if you're, you know, if you need to get off of Darvish's money, Noah Syndergaard is an arm who has the upside, you know, that where if you're the Cubs, you can still compete if Noah Syndergaard lives up to his potential.
Boy, and he really does look like Thor, doesn't he? That guy's got some body. Yeah. I wouldn't put the shirt on either.
Did you see the shirtless?
I saw it. It's unbelievable.
Yurk, did you see Noah Syndergaard throwing shirtless bullpens yesterday?
I did not.
It was
see
all
that
the craze
video.
On social media.
It's pretty
was
unbelievable.
Was it on Twitter?
Yeah.
It's out there.
It's out there. Like, it was on Instagram and Twitter. He's actually ARB eligible again. It looks like earliest free agent is 2022. So maybe that would be actually something. You know, he's going to make he makes over $10 million in arbitration, but you're saving some of the money that you would have under normal circumstances on Yu Darvish. I don't know. It'll be interesting stuff to follow. As we roll more into the hot stove and into baseball's offseason, like, the direction of the Cubs will become pretty crystal clear at some point. I think it was clear after last offseason, let's face it, where even before pandemic, Eric, they didn't spend a dime, did they? I mean, they didn't go out and add any free agents. They picked up somebody late, I think, right on the eve of spring training, and they were not players whatsoever. They let Castellanos walk. They were not interested at all in spending money, and it sure doesn't appear that they're going to be interested in spending money this year, especially with the pandemic. What flip side, White Sox should be, and I hope they don't use the pandemic as an excuse because they're still profitable. They still make money. If you have to go into debt a little bit, so be it. That's what businesses do. If he has to, he has to, but this is it. This is the window. Now is the time, and there are a couple of very attractive free agents that could help your ball club. George Springer would look a hell of a lot better than Nomar Mazara in the White Sox outfield, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, Springer. Springer and Bauer. Why wouldn't you go for the top two? You're the team on the come. You're the team on the rise. Extrapolate the White Sox numbers even after going 2-8 for their final 10. They'd have been in the mid-90s, the early 90s, mid-90s in victory.
It sure would have
been a 20-plus game improvement for the Chicago White Sox.
All right, Mr. Fiscally Responsible Baseball Spender, Carmen DeFalco. You're mad about the White Sox locking up Jose Abreu for 3 years, but now you're proposing that George Springer at 31, is he? You want to go lock him up? Because he's going to be a big money deal. Like George Springer,
an 8-year guy.
He's going to cost more. Yeah, maybe not that much, but he's going to cost more than Jose Abreu costs.
Well, that's for sure. Springer is, how old is George Springer? He is 31. He's older than I thought.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and he's going to be a 4 or 5 year deal minimum
in the non-steroid time too, non-PED.
Listen, he's
you
a
know
great
what the breakdown is.
He's a great player, but this is also where you need to be. Prudent.
Should Bauer's age scare us? Bauer's 30.
He's a
right?
pitcher, though. If pitchers.
Pitchers are scary. They're sometimes even scarier.
They're for an animal.
Yes, Yerko's right. Like, you know, if you're investing in a pitcher, you know what? It could go bust if he has an arm injury. That's the truth of the matter.
Well, that's always dangerous.
But what about Trevor Bauer? Only wants a 1-year deal. He wants to go year to year, he keeps saying. You know, would you sign up for that? A $35 million deal for Trevor Bauer for 1 year?
Yeah. Wouldn't you?
I think
so. There's no long-term commitment?
The only downside is if he hurt his arm, that's $35 million, and
waste.
You have nothing on the back end.
You got nothing to show for it. Can you imagine he blows out his shoulder or his arm, and you've got absolutely nothing? Like, you've got no option whatsoever built in to protect you, and you spend $35 million on 1 year, coming off of a pandemic where you didn't.
Then I guess if you're a GM, would you make the argument like you Darvish, you know, the first 2 years for him as a member of the Cubs were lost because of injury that he was dealing with.
Yeah, can you imagine if he has one of those years? There's risk on both sides. There's risk there for the team. There's risk there for Trevor Bauer, not just taking some sort of a long-term deal that's going to guarantee him more than just $35 million he would make next year. It's going to be a strange offseason, guys. The last few have been strange for baseball. So
I'm wondering what the purge is going to look like on the north side.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be interesting.
Front office personnel weren't the only one that are going to be laid off here.
It's
guys on the field are going to be given their walking papers and say, you know, traded or done whatever to. Is the .308 Kyle Schwarber on base percentage good enough for you, Carm?
I don't think it's good enough.
Because his batting average was .188.
Yeah.
So you're still 120 points above.
I love the disparity, but man,
yeah,
308.
It's great disparity, but that'd be good if it was like 240 to 360.
That'd
that's a good disparity at the range that you want it to be at.
I would agree with you.
And I love Schwarber. Nobody loves Schwarber more than I do.
You'd take that disparity any day. You just need the batting average, I guess, to be higher.
Baez is the third best shortstop in the city of Chicago.
Oh, I don't know if he's the third best shortstop in the city.
I got Tim Anderson number one, and then anybody else is number two.
Over Javi Baez, not a lot
well,
of
what's Baez doing? How many outside balls are you going to chase?
Well, he won a Gold Glove.
And what made him special was his fielding, and even his fielding suffered last year.
He won a Gold Glove this year.
Yeah,
he's
reputation.
Still pretty good.
You lectured me on how a Gold Glove doesn't really mean anything anymore. And now all of a sudden you're going to say he won a Gold Glove like it's some sort of validation.
Eric, I'm trying to make you feel better, that's all.
I don't feel good about the Cubs. It's got to be blown to hell and rebuilt again. I'm all for the rebuild.
I got you. 3-1-2.
5 years after a World Series, I'm rebuilding already.
Yeah. Hey, that's baseball kind of. You know, you might
that's right.
have, that, it is what it is, man.
It's the way it works.
312-332-3776. That is the number. You can hit us up on Twitter. Yurko is at Yurko64. That's Yurko with the J. I'm at Carmen DeFalco. We'll be right back.
It's Carmen and Yurko.
Sports talk while you're on the clock.
Do I exaggerate?
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Mm-hmm. 7 and 10 minutes live in Vegas. It's Carmen and Yurko. Now, Meller found a story, Yurk, about a better that's putting up a pretty hefty sum of money on the Green Bay Packers on the money line. I never like doing stuff like this because you got to lay like $900 to win $100 if you're picking the Packers because they're hosting the Jaguars. And I told you that stat earlier.
Is a guy putting down 900 grand to win 100 grand?
That's about right, Yurk. He's putting down 900 grand. What did he put down, Meller? He put down
just shy of 100K, so
99,000 to win 9,000.
Wow.
Doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. I don't understand it at all.
He's putting up 99. Like, if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt on the first series, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, 99 grand to win 9,000.
It doesn't make sense. I don't get any better that would do that. And obviously, the guy's got money. I mean, you got 99 grand you can put down. You got money. But like, how do you make a wager like that?
Well, I guess they believe that Jacksonville's got no chance in hell winning up in Green Bay.
That boggles my mind.
And the weird thing is, like the Jags aren't good by any means, but they're not like Jets bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
close. Like, they've lost seven.
They are, but look, they've played some tight games.
They lost by two last week.
They beat the Colts in the opening weekend.
They did.
Yeah, but now they truly know they got no chance, and they're just going to be crap.
But I mean, you know what?
The kid's name that's starting?
Jake Luton.
Jake Luton.
They're no longer Luton-free. They're the Jake Luton-led Jaguars. Right.
Oh, come on.
That was Harry, sorry. Harry asked.
Luton.
But you know what, though? He can throw a better deep ball than Gardner Minshew
can. Well, that's probably true.
And so it opens up like some possibilities. I would not wager.
No.
Anything close to that?
Like if I had DJ Chark.
If I had that much money, obviously you're a successful person if you can throw that kind of money around. At least you'd think. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he's a trust fund. Maybe I have no idea. But
isn't there?
Why would you bet that kind of money?
Isn't there a game we look at every week and we say, you finish Sunday at about 6:30 and you go, but I knew they weren't going to be in this game at all.
Yeah,
that's in essence what this guy is saying. It doesn't even matter if the Jacksonville Jaguars play their best game.
It's like, why
what he's telling you is they got no chance in hell, and for him, it's free money. I'm theoretically risking my $99,000 to know that I'm going to collect $9,000 no matter what.
I guess, like, see, I hear that, and I go, why? If you've got so much money that you can bet $99K, why would you risk it on just $9K? But maybe that's why he's got so much money. He finds the absolute right bets like that, and he's guaranteeing himself. There's no such thing as a guarantee in sports betting, but he's getting as close as he possibly can with this pick to guarantee himself an extra $9,000. Like, is that the philosophy? I don't know. Just seems crazy to me. I never like laying a big number. Like, in baseball, I'll never, even if, you know, like DeGrom's pitch, you know, DeGrom's always going to lay a big number, right? Especially in a lot of lopsided games, lopsided matchups, or like prime Kershaw, Yurk, or Arrieta in 15 and 16, or DeGrom the last couple years, probably the best example I could give you. Like, you're going to find games where they're laying over $2, and it's like, why would you do that? I mean, I wouldn't do that, let alone lay 900 to win 100. It's boggles the mind.
Baseball's weird because sometimes your starting pitcher's not going to go all nine innings.
That's true.
Then it gets to the bullpen, and now you're no longer betting against DeGrom, or you're betting with DeGrom. So that's where it gets a little weird.
And that's why you don't lay 900.
Zero game, right.
You're right.
Baseball, it's definitely different.
You're right.
But in a team game like football, where everybody's kind of relying upon everybody there, I think it's a little bit more, you know, there's a reason you put 16s next to, in confidence picks, there's 16s next to the Tom Brady-led New England Patriots when they were in their prime.
Yeah.
Because you knew the Patriots were going to go out and pound the Miami Dolphins at home in New England. You know, down in Miami, different story. I wouldn't put that kind of money down there in Miami.
That's right.
Different story. But, or them, Patriots against the Jets when the Jets were hapless. You knew that, or Buffalo. Buffalo couldn't compete, except for the year that Dick Geron almost had him beat on a Monday night or a Sunday night, and then they screwed it up right at the end of the game, and they ended up losing. But that was one of those where'd Buffalo come from?
You know,
and it was a lot tighter than anybody thought it was going to be.
The more I think about it, too, look, you got the extra factor of COVID playing a role. Like,
can you imagine?
You know, like Saturday, Aaron Rodgers might be put. I don't think it's going to happen, and I made the joke earlier in the week that
quarterbacks don't get it.
Ben's going to play because he's a quarterback. But still, that's on the table. They just played the 49ers, who had a bunch of guys last Thursday in COVID protocol.
Meller, everybody knows quarterbacks can't get COVID. Come on. Right. Trust the science. The scientists have come out and they have said that quarterbacks in the NFL named Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees cannot get COVID. They can't get it.
Do they even run the quarterback tests?
No. They know they can't get COVID. Come on. We're pro-science on this radio station, on this show. We're backing the science. Everybody knows they can't get COVID. Please save your communications to us if you think we're being serious, because we can't handle it today, okay? Yurko, you were talking, by the way, real quick about the Patriots. I wanted to tell you something.
Patriots.
Take a guess. You know, they're about a 7.5-point underdog at home. Take a guess the last time they were a touchdown dog at home.
Last time they were a touchdown dog at home was 1989.
2001.
Brady went in.
Mod on. 2001 was the last. That's incredible. 2001 was the last time they were a touchdown dog at home. Bill Belichick, as coach of the Patriots, getting 7 points or more, touchdown or more, 7-3 against the spread, 2-0 at home. But you know what? Even with all that, I couldn't bet the Patriots. I don't think they're a very good football team. I just couldn't bet them. I'm staying away from Baltimore. I've been on the wrong side of the Ravens each of the last 2 weeks. I can't figure them out. Not a game I'll play, but even with all those stats, Yurko, I couldn't bet the Patriots this weekend. Isn't that crazy? Getting over a tie. That game might go out to 9.
Yeah.
Before it's done.
Sunday morning, I'll release my Yurko's Dozen again. Last week, just 7-5-1. Somewhat disappointing, but, you know, it's okay, I guess. The gamblers consider that okay. You can make a living at 7-5-1, right, Carmen?
As long as you're over 53%, you can make a living.
All right, I'll be making a living then, but I haven't really perused the numbers. I'm going more for the feel. Carolina, again, without McCaffrey.
McCaffrey, yeah.
You know, that's a 6-point spread right now.
I kind of have a feeling, like, I love betting Teddy Bridgewater as an underdog. We'll ask Furman about this game, but yeah. I kind of have a feeling the Bucks are going to unleash hell, you know? They're kind of going to pull what's the movie with Russell Crowe? Gladiator. They're going to unleash hell, Yurko.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, right. I don't know. Like, I love Teddy Bridgewater as a dog. I was on him last week. I had them, and they covered, and they almost won that game, and they covered in Arrowhead. Ooh. But, man, I don't know. There's something just the way they got blown out, the way the Bucks got blown out. Now you got a division game that you kind of got to win. Like,
it's a weird record, too. I mean, it's a weird week because Detroit's a favorite.
I like Washington big time in that game. Go ahead,
Mel. Just like Teddy because he celebrated his 20th birthday at Olive Garden yesterday.
His 20th birthday?
28th birthday.
28th birthday.
At Olive Garden yesterday.
That's what he chooses for his 28th birthday? You're Teddy Bridgewater and you're going to the Olive Garden?
He said, it was on Tuesday. I apologize.
That's the Italian food he's ever had.
He said, quote, had some salad and some bread.
That salad they give you before the meal and the breadsticks is phenomenal.
I mean, salad.
You know what they do, too? I don't know if you knew this, Carm.
I don't. I've never been in there.
I know. You're missing out. You know what they do is they actually come around, and they've got a little cheese grater, and they ask you if you want Parmesan.
Oh.
It's magnificent.
Fresh of the pepper. You want the Parmesan cheese? Oh, why, thank you, Pepper Boy.
That is real Italian eating.
That is real. That's how Teddy Bridgewater, millionaire Teddy Bridgewater, celebrating his 28th birthday at Olive Garden. I don't understand.
The finest Italian meal.
There's nothing better in, where are they? They're in Charlotte, or the Panthers. What? There's nothing better in Charlotte? I can't believe that.
I don't know if you could find a better thing in Chicago than Olive Garden if you're looking for Italian.
Stop yourself. Todd Furman live in Vegas when we come back next.
Stream ESPN 1000 anytime through the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
That magical time every Friday, we talk to one of our favorite guests. He's been with us for years. He's a superstar. The Bet the Board podcast, Fox Sports, CBS Sports. You see him everywhere. A true aficionado. I don't think I've ever thrown a game at Todd Furman where he's gone, I don't know. Don't have too much on that game. It's remarkable. He is at Todd Furman on Twitter, and he joins Carmen and Yurko now on the Corona Hotline on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing very well this morning, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Masters, we're excited. The Bears are basically unwatchable on offense. They are, so that sucks. They are playing Monday night, though. They're an intra-division home dog. Those teams have done very well coming into Week 10, 12-2 against the number so far. We know Cousins has never won on Monday Night Football. So, I don't know. There's some things that maybe line up well. Are the Sharps in on the Bears, or are they just too putrid offensively?
You know, honestly, I fully expected there to be professional money coming in on the Bears. As you talk about the progression of a team, when you look at the Bears, they closed as a 3.5-point dog on Thursday Night Football weeks ago against the Bucks. Win that game outright, obviously erasing a double-digit deficit, and now find themselves as a short home underdog against the Vikings team that's clearly trending in the right direction but doesn't have quite the same pedigree. When you look at Minnesota's numbers, the way to attack this team is over the top of the vertical passing game. As Bears fans know all too well, that's not exactly Chicago's strength, even if they get Darnell Mooney involved. They get Allen Robinson on track. I'm not sure Nick Foles can provide that particular element. David Montgomery a little bit banged up. And you've actually seen professional bettors happy to lay the 2.5 with Minnesota. I do think it's going to be a slightly different story if this number gets to 3. But for me on this game, guys, I made Minnesota a 1.8-point favorite in this game, so I don't see a whole heck of a lot of wiggle room unless it's a value bet should Chicago get to 3.
Very interesting. We were just talking about a story we read where a gambler put down $99K to win $9,000, a money line bet on the Packers. How does that make any sense?
You have a lot of money to burn, and I guess if you're trying to figure out the volatility in the stock market, you figure out that maybe that ROI makes a little bit more sense than trying to go into a blue chip fund or anything else along those lines. But generally speaking, not exactly the best long-term investing strategy, especially for a recreational bettor, putting up that kind of cash to make a little bit coming back. But at the same time, we see it in boxing probably more than any other sport, where you can actually find value in favorites that are undervalued. The perfect illustration in the poster child for that would, of course, been Conor McGregor against Floyd Mayweather. Floyd should have been about a 1-50 favorite, but with all the public money, he goes off about 1-4 instead.
I want to thank you for last week Hammers 1-0 victory over Fulham. I'm sure all the soccer bettors out there were quite happy with that result. This week, I take you out to Arizona. Buffalo against Arizona. Arizona is minus 2.5. I think they've got the wrong team favored in this one. Buffalo's the better team.
You know, any of these soccer bettors out there, Yerk, we had to dodge a late bullet from Fulham, parrying aside a penalty kick there to save that 1-0 victory, but we'll take it any way we can get it. When you look at this game here, I think it's fascinating trying to figure out what Buffalo will bring to the table. Two very emotional games in back-to-back weeks. They finally get the Patriots monkey off their back. They followed up with a dominant performance from start to finish against Seattle, where their offense really looked to get on track. The elements played a big role there with allowing them to throw deep in an unseasonably warm game in Western New York. Meanwhile, you look at Arizona on the other side, coming up a bit short against the Miami Dolphins. Not quite sure why Cliff Kingsbury ultimately elects to settle for a 49-yard field goal that would have tied the game. Figured he'd take a slightly more aggressive approach. But when I look at this spot here, I actually think it sets up nicely for Arizona, but I don't think you have a ton of wiggle room, even in that 1.5-2 range. I think the best angle to attack in this one is going over the total. I notice the best of the number has evaporated from the market, 54.5 now out to 56 thereabouts. But I think this game sees north of 60 points. I really expect both of these passing attacks to be on full display.
I like that play. Todd Furman's our guest, the Bet the Board podcast, at Todd Furman on Twitter. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. I love betting me some Teddy Two Gloves as an underdog. He did it again last week. I was on the Panthers and Arrowhead, 22-5 now against the spread as a dog. But something tells me this might be the week to fade it, because Tampa has bounced back from its first two losses of the season, ripping off three straight. They beat the Panthers pretty good in the first one. And the way they got embarrassed on Sunday night, Todd, doesn't it feel like they might unleash hell in Carolina this weekend?
You'd have to think this is the perfect spot for Tampa to be able to get their ground game on track against Carolina's defensive front, ultimately giving Tom Brady a little bit more time in the pocket. You mentioned Carolina, and there's no doubt that they've been outstanding as an underdog, but you dig into some of their numbers, and they're not forcing punts. I mean, in covering against the Saints, a game that came down to the bell, similar scenario in Arrowhead, I believe they only forced two punts total in those games, and typically that's not sustainable, so it's really a credit to Matt Rhule and what they're building in Charlotte, knowing that they have an undermanned defense. But you look at this particular game, and what was interesting is it opened in that 6.5-7 range. You saw initial support for the underdog get as low as 4.5. Christian McCaffrey gets ruled out, and the number has leaked up. Normally, I would be in the same boat trying to make a case for a home underdog, but this, for me, is a lay-it-or-don't-play-it type scenario. If Tampa were to drop this game or even look pedestrian in the wake of what we saw on Sunday night, you can almost write them off as an NFC contender, and maybe there's some deeper underlying issues going on there.
Yeah. I'm looking at Houston as a team in a little bit of disarray. I've never seen athletes talk about the firing of the public relations director like I do now with the Houston Texans. I don't know if that firing moved the line of Amy Palchich, whether it did one way or the other. But I'm just saying, how does Houston take the field after that?
It did not move the number there at all, but I'm kind of with you there. I mean, a name that none of us had heard in football circles all of a sudden becomes front and center news. So maybe the Texans go out there and play angry. Unfortunately, in this spot right now, this number is now off the board as the Browns have shut down their team facility and they had a member test positive. We're not quite sure what player. But when you're looking at the handicap here, I think it's interesting to note that the total was taking significant under money. 3.5 more or less the prevailing. 55.5 is where it opened. We're not quite sure if there'll be some weather in the forecast, but I can tell you the Browns getting Nick Chubb back in the fold should make them a little bit more balanced, and he really is the key cog. So if you have a chance to lay 3, assuming everyone is a full go, it's Cleveland or pass from here.
Yeah, Houston dead last stopping the run so far this year, so Nick Chubb coming back could be huge in that game. Steelers, look, it's impressive. 8-0 straight up, 6-2 against the number. You take a deeper dive into some of the things going on with their offense, and it actually doesn't paint a very pretty picture, Todd. They're back home after 3 straight weeks on the road. Are they a little inflated right now, though, laying over a touchdown against the Bengals team coming off bye?
It's so interesting because the Steelers, as you alluded to, Carm, have played a number of close games. They haven't exactly gone out there and taken care of inferior opposition. But you wonder if last week they're stubbing the toe against the Dallas Cowboys, allowing, you know, Dallas to essentially have a shot to win that game on the final play, provides the wake-up call that they needed, especially when they get back in the division. Now, how will Big Ben look knowing he's been away from the team facility on the COVID reserve list all week? I think with a veteran quarterback and knowing his ailing knees, it probably did him a little bit of a favor to keep him out of practice. And what's interesting, when you look at the Steelers, they've been so good in this division, mainly because they've dominated their two division rivals from Ohio. 18-1-1 the last 20 games against the Bengals and Browns. Jeez. And in that span, they've gone 13-6-1 against the number. Assuming this price reopens in that 7 and 7.5 range, I actually think it's a good buy low spot on the Steelers, knowing that this game was 10.5 and people are buzzing about Joe Burrow and Cincinnati being so good against the number so far this season.
All right. Do we got any best plays we want to talk about for the weekend? What do you like?
Yeah, I'll do one right in my backyard. On Sunday afternoon, the Raiders as 4-point favorites against the Denver Broncos. This is actually the first time that the Raiders will be favored in a game since week one when they won on the road against Carolina. These two familiar foes know each other pretty well. And last week, Denver had to go to Atlanta without A.J. Boye and Bryce Callahan. Different storyline here. I think Denver can run the football. I expect them to start a little bit quicker. And while it's always scary to back a Vic Fangio-led football team, catching points is a much more comfortable role. I'll take Denver plus the points. And if we're looking to do a little bit of dumpster diving in the college football realm this weekend, we're actually going to go out to the American Athletic Conference. I think Tulsa slightly undervalued as a 2.5-point favorite against SMU. Arguably one of the best secondaries in the league. They're outstanding on the defensive line. And I think their offense is starting to get on track. Look for Zach Smith to have a big day off the bye. I think Tulsa wins by a touchdown plus.
Todd, thanks, buddy. We love it. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend.
Always a pleasure, gents. Good luck with your wagering.
You too. Todd Furman, the Bet the Board podcast. Check it out at Todd Furman on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. So he's going Broncos plus the 4 against Vegas, Tulsa minus 2 against SMU. Mike North and I have odds couple tonight. We'll talk about week 10 in the NFL, some of the college games, a lot of Big Ten, Notre Dame. Can they cover a big number here? They've been asked to do that a lot this year. They won outright as a dog last week, back to laying about 2 touchdowns against BC on the road this weekend. So we'll cover all those games. And Mike has his bonus play coming up for us in just a little bit. I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick timeout, Yerk. When we come back, Mike North has that bonus play. I think we have some Jose Abreu sound that's come in, right, guys?
Ooh.
Because he was meeting the media today. We're going to play that.
We'll let you hear from his translator.
Yes, we will hear from Jose's translator. And this is about La Russa. Yes, okay, it's about Tony La Russa. So that's why I want to break a little early here, and then we'll talk to Mike for a few minutes. We'll get the best play, and then we will play that Jose Abreu sound for you on Tony La Russa. We'll do all that when we come back next.
This is Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
We'll play the Jose Abreu soundbite on Tony La Russa coming up in just a couple of minutes. Greeny's up at noon. Waddle and Sylvie with you 2 to 6. Black and Abdallah tonight 6 to 7. And then 7 to 8, Mike North and I have a full hour of sports gambling talk. Lots about week 10 in the NFL, the Masters, college slate, all that fun stuff coming up on the Odds Couple tonight here on ESPN 1000. So don't miss that. And Mike joins us right now for his Carmen and Yurko bonus play. And my partner's been pretty hot the last couple of weeks. Mikey, what's going on?
What's going on, Carm? How are you doing, York?
I'm doing good, kid. Watching golf.
Oh, it's glorious.
Yeah, believe me, I got a story for tonight. Well, I can tell it real quick. I had Tiger minus 140 against Mickelson. Mickelson comes all the way back, almost has minus, he's minus four with Tiger. He goes to 18, misses the putt. I win the bet.
Wow.
He took a bogey on 18 for about a foot and a half, 2 foot or so.
Too close for comfort, but that's a winner. That's good.
Yeah, I thought Tiger was going to put him away, but Phil's still got some golf left in him. And we got some picks in us. And you know what? With the La Russa talk this week and with the Bears and everything else, something's been overshadowed. And I had to bring it up because the man's a quality broadcaster. The man's a pride and joy, okay, of Thornton Fractional. The guy played in the National Football League for the Green Bay Packers and Jacksonville. It's the Yurko Bowl this week.
It is the Yurko Bowl.
And people don't even realize it. Yurk,
right.
Did you have any time to discuss this?
We haven't had time to discuss it, except for the fact that some guys put $99,000 up to win $9,000 taking the
on the Packers.
Taking the Packers on the money line.
Which seems crazy.
Well, he's gonna have a little bit of a problem because I hear the locker room's riled up for you. You've been overshadowed because of other big stories. Make no mistake about it. The man played on these teams, ladies and gentlemen. Green Bay and Jacksonville, when they were both pretty relevant.
Competitive. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah. We've Bibi and I got some West German food brought in. We got some Croatian delights, some pheasant.
Oh,
we're going to be tailgating and stuff like that. But there's no doubt in my mind that it's going to be both defenses aren't that good. It's not like Clay Matthews or Reggie White's walking through that door in honor of John Yurkovic. 13.5 in the Green Bay and the Jacksonville Jaguars, okay?
Jaguars now, plus the points.
Yeah. Now, I'm not done. Then the system, the model, says to me, Mike, look at this, Notre Dame, minus 13.5. Who went to Notre Dame, Carm?
Yurko's brother.
Mirko.
Right. There's connection, right?
We got synergy.
We got synergy. We got the Yurko Bowl. We got Notre Dame, minus 13.5. The Jacksonville Jaguars, plus 13.5. It's an all-Yurko weekend. I'm going to go put on a German or Croatian outfit. I don't know if I have one in the closet and get ready.
It's Friday the 13th. We've got ND minus 13.5, the Jags plus 13.5. It's Yurkovich is all around. I love it.
I love it.
That's it, buddy. Hashtag Yurko Bowl. See you guys.
See you tonight, Mike.
All right, Mike.
All right, guys.
There it is. At North to North, those are the two bonus plays. Jacksonville plus 13.5, ND minus 13.5.
You got to find an angle sometimes.
By the way, speaking of ND in Green Bay, condolences, Paul Horning has passed away.
Oh, did that just happen?
Yeah, like within
one of Louisville's favorites, guys.
Adam Schefter tweeted it.
All right, Paul Horning has passed.
Good old number 5 out of Louisville.
Hadn't even seen that yet. All right, now let us play Jose Abreu, okay? So apparently Abreu said during the press conference, and you're going to hear the translator speak for Jose, that he did have a brief conversation with Tony La Russa, and I guess a follow-up question was asked, do you think you lending support to Tony will help everybody else sort of get behind this hire? Because it has not really been received well by baseball. We don't know what it's been received like by these players because nobody's really had an opportunity to talk. Tim Anderson mentioned how he hadn't talked to Tony La Russa yet, but Abreu has. Here is Abreu's answer to the question.
La Russa has been one of the greatest managers in the history of the sport. I knew that. And you know, that's something that you have to respect. I think, you know, we're going to want to do good with him. When we hired him, I reached out to Pujols, to Albert Pujols, and I asked him about La Russa because La Russa was his manager during his time in St. Louis. And Pujols just told me that he was a great manager, you know, an upstanding person, a manager that I would like to play for. And I'm just looking for it, looking forward to it. Then, you know, I know that, you know, things happen and this is a free country. You can have an opinion, but and you have to respect each one opinion. But for us, as a baseball player, we have to appreciate what we have. And, you know, right now he is our manager. And like I said before, his record as a manager in the big leagues is one of the best. Then, you were going to have the chance to play for one of the greatest managers in the history of the game.
All right, so there's Jose's interpreter talking about Tony La Russa, the brief conversation he had, and I guess as you heard there, he did call Albert Pujols when he found out that Tony La Russa was going to be the manager, and Pujols gave him a ringing endorsement. Not surprised by that. It's kind of crazy that they've got to answer all these questions for naming a manager. I guess had they named A.J. Hinch, they would have still been asked questions. Oh, your manager was caught cheating. He was suspended a year. There'd still be questions, but this line of questioning that these players have to face because the hiring seems so odd, Yurko. It's just, it's bizarre, you know? It never has really seemed to fit. That's regardless of what we found out this week, you know, about the DUI charge, right. But it's just strange.
I mean, at some point, you know, the players realize that, hey, this is our manager and that's the way it is. And the members of the media can question it until the cows come home. At some point, they're going to have to build a bridge and get over it.
Yeah, because the players,
just the way it is.
You're right.
Because he's your manager.
He sort of alluded to that, didn't he? It sounded like it, Yurk, what you just said. Like, hey, they got to go play now and try to win. If it's in spite of him or whatever, I mean, there's really no choice.
I've never really, you know, they've asked for some feedback of players every once in a while, but they just do that to kind of be courteous. They don't really care what a player thinks. They're going to do what they want to do anyway when they hire the manager, and the manager's going to implement a system, and the players will adjust to whatever the manager wants to do. That's the way it usually works.
All right, Yurko's Dozen will be released Sunday. You know, people sort of got accustomed to you doing it on Friday. I get asked all the time, but now it's Sunday mornings. Be looking for the napkin Sunday morning on Twitter at Yurko64.
I actually had someone ask me on the golf course, could they get the napkin?
Yeah. Done, sure. Yeah. I can save them.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, we can auction them off here. Yeah.
A lot of them I've torn and thrown to shreds. I put one on an envelope, so I have still the envelope. But because of the COVID and because of inactives, I'd like to be a little bit more accurate. I found that to affect me in my picks, especially when I went 3-10. So I asked for more time so I could be a little bit. Hey, I like to give out winners. I don't like to give out losers.
That's smart, Yurko.
Yeah, so I'm going to be patient. Sunday morning it'll be out. I'm playing a little bit of golf tomorrow. I'm going to slap the white ball around.
Nice.
Have some fun. Yeah.
Enjoy the Masters. We'll be all over Bears and Bears and Vikings on Monday night. Monday, Yurko will have his keys. I don't know if people are going to find time to squeeze it in with football, college, pro, and the Masters this weekend, but a show that I mentioned earlier this week on Netflix and a show that Meller just started watching. If you haven't seen Queen's Gambit yet, the Queen's Gambit on Netflix, do yourself a favor and start watching it. It is 7 episodes. I have just one left. The 6th episode was incredible, and if had it not been so late Wednesday night, I probably would have finished the season, but I will do it some point this weekend. Start watching the Queen's Gambit because it is great. Meller's like, what, 3 episodes in, you said?
Yeah, I'm 3 episodes in, and last night I actually watched the first half of Titans-Colts, paused it, and the wife said, let's watch episode number 3. I was like, you're on. I'll pause the game. I'll go back as soon as this episode ended.
It is so good. And it comes with a ringing endorsement from Yurko's niece, too, who was telling him about it.
Yeah, Savannah Zachman. She loves
it. It is awesome. So at some point, get in on the Queen's Gambit on Netflix. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you to Todd Furman. Thank you to Mike North. And great job by our wonderful producers, Midway Jeff Meller, J.R. Strauss, and Randy Merkin. Enjoy the golf and the Masters. We'll be back with you on Monday to break it all down.
And Carm, good luck to the Badgers. They're back this weekend after a 2-week hiatus.
At Michigan,
Saturday Night Football, 6:30.
Sounds good, Merk. I wish you... They throttled Michigan last year. But, of course, you had Jonathan Taylor last year.
They did.
See you on Monday, everybody. Greeny's next. Waddle and Sylvia at 2. Black and Abdallah at 6. Mike and I have Odds Couple tonight at 7.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord has split you.
Stay tuned. We'll have more.
I think the cool people liked it.
Well, I don't think that's whack. I think that's dope.
Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia!